You're listening to the Igniting Souls Show. At Igniting Souls Publishing Agency, we help authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers write, publish, and market their books the right way and turn them into 18 streams of income. We invite you to our annual Igniting Souls Conference. Learn more at IgnitingSoulsConference.com. This episode of the Igniting Souls Show is part of our Ignited Entrepreneur series, where we get to talk with business professionals around the world who are on fire in their entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host, Mike Dominey. Joining me today is Craig Coppola. He's one of the founding principals of Lee & Associates Arizona, but he has so many projects going on and has started multiple companies. Fantastic and fascinating guy here. Excited for our conversation. Craig, thanks so much for joining me here today, man.
Thanks, Mike. Very, very nice to be here.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we chatted a little bit just before we got things rolling and recording here, and you expressed how really you have this ecosystem of things that you do, talking about real estate, talking about investing, all sorts of things that work together to kind of form a portfolio of who you are and what you do. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, let's just start with a little bit about what you do, and then we'll get into how it all got started.
So I, for 37 years, I've been a commercial real estate office broker representing owners and tenants in leasing office space. So I've done about 4,000 leases in my career. So I made my money, and you know, the old fashioned way, over the last 37 years, just every year grinding it out. And then as I made money, I have this addiction. As I tell my wife, I have this investing addiction. And a lot of people have poor addictions. Mine has been investing. And so for the last 30 years, took me about 10 years to start really getting going. I've been investing in commercial real estate and in a startup company, seed round investing. So it's been kind of, now I have this, I'm actually pretty busy now. So it's funny.
How many companies have you started?
So it, depending on how you look at this, you know, today, you know, my Habanero Ventures family office, I'm calling it. Habanero Ventures is where we acquire the startup companies. There's 40 in there today. We've done about 60 deals. All of those, I would say about 90% of those are startup companies. Of those 60 or 70 deals, probably 20 I've been more than active in, more than just a minority investor. And today, I would say I have three buckets that I look at. One is I'm very active in. I have seven companies today that I'm very active in that we founded, started. I have another 10 that are I'm somewhat active, advisor shares, and then the 23 or so that I'm just an investor in.
I love that term, buckets. Just the idea of you've got all these different buckets, these different pots around that you'll kind of manage and go between, and I think it's really an interesting perspective for our listeners here to see someone who has this ecosystem, these multiple buckets of different opportunities and different ventures. That I think it's a way to go, right? I mean, some people just stick to the one thing. This is what I do. This is my baby. This is what I'm doing. And then there's these serial entrepreneurs or investors who love building things, right?
It's a super interesting conversation. My best buddy that I hike with all over the world, we just got back from 25 days in Spain. He is exactly opposite of me. He built a company and it was the only thing that he could do. And I said, hey, 5 years ago, I knew he was going to sell it. They just sold it last year. And I'm like, you should start working on your next act right now, getting it going, doing, because this is what I do. And yeah, he can't do it. That, I mean, the guy literally has, like you were saying, and I found as I get older, there's just people who do this and don't. I actually have a fourth bucket, which is being author, right? So I've written 5 books. I have a 6th done, and we're working on a 7th now.
Love it.
And the books have been less about making money and going out there, and more about just kind of, you know, I've gotten lots of people starting to kind of ask me to help them. And so the books are a way to kind of leverage out some of the knowledge that I've learned over the last 40 years of working.
Awesome. So, I would imagine you have quite a number of topics to talk about and a lot of value to add through that. So that's a really great way to be able to pass that along to people.
That's a nice, good compliment. Yes. Tons of stuff, Mike. I think so.
So when did you first consider yourself an entrepreneur, man? If you're like one of these people who just loves building things and starting a new thing and looking forward to the next thing, when did that start, or what did it look like when you were younger? Talk to me a little bit about that.
You know, it's the most incredible thing. And I look back and now there's always a key couple moments in everybody's lives. I grew up, I was a baseball player. So I played college baseball, and I didn't get drafted out of high school. I didn't get drafted out of junior college. And then I didn't get drafted my junior. And then my senior year, I got drafted by the Minnesota Twins. And I was a mid-round pick, a 22nd round pick. And I signed and I played. And I remember playing. And I had a very short career. But the guy who ran the Minnesota Twins minor league was a guy named George Brophy. And George was this super heavy, overweight guy who had never played baseball in his life, but he had married the daughter of the owner of the Twins.
Okay.
And they gave him this position. And George Brophy, they had this saying, when George Brophy came to town, he never left alone. Huh. And what it meant is he always released somebody. I made it through the season, got released in the offseason. But at that point, when I got released, I remember saying to myself, I'm not gonna put myself in a position where somebody else makes the decision for me. And in professional baseball, other people are making your decisions. My first job out of my career, I worked for this company, Equitech, which is no longer in business. But same situation. Here I am, less than a year after I get released, and I've got my boss, you know, kind of directing me and telling me what to do. And I knew at that point, I'm like, this isn't gonna work.
You're a commodity.
So I said in 1991. In 1984, I started betting on myself. 91, we actually started our company that I'm still a founding partner of today. So we're 30 years old today, but it takes you a little bit of time to kind of get there.
I bet. Well, that's fascinating. A venture into minor league baseball there. That was an unexpected detail in that conversation, but that's fascinating. That's when you first realized, you know, instead of being a commodity, for an organization, I can build one.
I think the same thing you want, all entrepreneurs want. I want to bet on myself. I made the decision early in 1984. I said, even with baseball, I was like, I think I can play. And then, you know, looking back, I'm like, I want to bet on myself. And so I put myself in a position. Since 1984, I've never had a paycheck, right? 1984. So I've never had a paycheck. And since then, it's always been, I'm just going to bet on myself. And I like, it's paid off for me. And so if you don't like betting on yourself, that's okay. I have a son who's with me, and he's going to bet on himself, but he's not going to be an alpha front guy. He'll be the number two guy in an organization. And there's a book called Rocket Fuel that Gina Wickman's written that I think is excellent. And Charlie's an implementer. And those folks that are definitely needed, and I have them in a lot of my businesses, but I was like, always, I'm going to bet on myself.
I like that term, and I like that challenge. What did that look like to you? I've heard of some people who literally put up money. They write a check to someone or they put up collateral, something physical, that they're like, all right, if I don't reach this goal, then this is yours. And it's a little bit of that incentive. Was there some sort of incentive like that for you when you decided, all right, I'm going all in with this? Or was it a more of a mental will and determination?
Well, I think because your question is, hey, Craig, first of all, I'm from six siblings. I'm really the black sheep of the family. I'm really the only entrepreneurial kid.
Oh yeah.
And my folks were school teachers. So six kids, both high school teachers. We had no money. And so the way that I bet on myself was I took a commission-based job and said, you know, you'd sink or swim. There was literally no backstop, no ability to. And it's interesting because I have four kids and my kids have backstops. So raising them is different than, you know, my dad at high school saying, hey, see you. And one, you know, he told me as a junior, you're either going to work your way through school or you're going to play baseball through school. Your decision. And that's what forced me to kind of put my head down and get better at baseball. And that kind of lesson then parlayed into, hey, I'm just going to take this bet. And quite frankly, I got married in 1989. So I'd been a broker for 5 years. I'd been supporting myself. We had a kid in 1990. And you know, you want to start talking about really betting on yourself. That's when you, you know, we had four kids. So we had four kids in 5 years. And so my wife stayed at home. And I just never had it. And Tracy and I laugh about it today because our kids don't remember. It's like, you know, every year, January 1, I wake up, Mike, going, how am I going to do that again? And that's the journey of the entrepreneur. The roller coaster ride up and down and up and down.
I love that. The just taking away the safety net, right? And just deciding to go all in. And I know we've got some listeners here who are starting something, you know, and they're trying to build a business around their book or speaking, and but hanging on to that backstop that you called it, right? That safety net there. And
well, you know, Adam Grant wrote a book called Originals. And if you read it, the first 80 pages is really all you need to read. But 80%, you think that everybody goes all in. I went all in on a commission-based job. I didn't, you know, say I'm just going to go start it in my garage. But 80% of all people who start companies start in their garages. They build the business 5 or years more, and then they make the leap out. So I'm not a proponent of, hey, just go out there and do it. I'm a proponent of, hey, let's do this in a very super smart way. And the smart way includes, is there a product market fit? And then today, in today's world, which is completely different than the world that I grew up in, I'm 60, Mike, you're young. You know, today the opportunity to start a business, to get product market fit, to get cash flow very quickly, to determine what you can do is there. So you don't have to, you know, in my day, you had to kind of figure out insurance, real estate, stockbroker. There weren't the opportunities that you can see today for lots of people. And so I think you can do both. I caution people. I say read originals and then figure out how to do it.
That's good.
Start your podcast, build it up, start writing books. I mean, if you read The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, you know, he said it took him like 30 years to write his first book, and he picked cherries in California, and he was aroused about it, and he worked on an oil rig, and he did all these things, and he said, I finally got my first book done. I was so relieved, and it was complete shit. You know, his book was horrible. Then he goes on to write better stuff, but that's okay too.
That's good. Was there a time, Craig, that you felt like, oh boy, made a mistake, got in over my head?
I've never told this story outside the family. We had our fourth kid. I owned a house. I had bought a little house before Tracy and I got married. Tracy and I just celebrated our 32nd anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. That's awesome.
So I'm living in this house. We get married. She moves in. We start having kids. So it's like 1,600 feet. We have our fourth kid, and she looks at me, and she's like, we need a bigger house. So I've written about this credible story. I'm in the real estate business. So I said, okay, great. She wants to move into this neighborhood. It's called Arcadia. I said, great. We're going to move into Arcadia. But here's what I want, because I'm in real estate. I want an acre lot. I want to be on a cul-de-sac. I want my backyard facing Camelback Mountain. And she says, great. So I pull up the research. There's only 32 homes in all of Arcadia that have that. Handwrite notes to every one of those owners. I take one of my kids to each one of those, and we knock on the door, and then the letter says, my wife grew up in this neighborhood. We're gonna raise our family here. We have four kids. This is our family home. We would like to buy your home. And we're only doing, I think I put on the letter, maybe 10 letters, but there were 32. And I got a home, right? The one thing I didn't put on there was the home. This is 20 some years ago. The home was $1.2 million. And I was like, I didn't put the price cap on it. The home we got was $1.2 million. And I'm sitting there with four small kids, wife stay at home. And my dad happened to come up. And so before I closed on the house, I'm kind of proud. I'm like walking through. And I owned my other home free and clear. So I went from this home that was 400. I had bought it at 160 and it was worth 400. So I'm like, I think I'm pretty big now. And then I buy $1.2 million. So I take all 400,000 and I'm putting it in here. And now I have an $800,000 mortgage. And I'm like, man. So I'm choking on this. I walk my dad through it. Nobody, and this is part of the story nobody knows. And my dad's walking through and I'm kind of like, what do you think? Do you think this is cool? And he goes, Yeah, I think this is nice, Craig. I don't know why anybody would need a house this big. And I'm like, oh man, what am I doing? What am I doing? So the coolest thing is, you know, we bought it. It's been a great home. We raised our kids here, all four kids here. We're still living here. And it's been a great, I mean, obviously the investment's taken off because real estate, but so it worked out really well. But there was a couple of years, Mike, I was choking pretty good.
Sometimes you feel like you bite off more than you can chew. That's a great story, man. Appreciate that sharing that. I think that's totally relatable. I think that we can, everyone has run into something similar to that, if not in the context of buying a house, but realizing like, oh boy,
yeah,
in the deep end.
For sure.
What's been a moment that has taken you and your work to like a new level, right? If you've been struggling with something, then you push through and you reach some sort of clarity. Maybe it's something someone says or just something you stumble on that you're like, now you get to elevate to a new level. Maybe it was going from six figures to seven figures or seven to eight or something like that. Is there something that you credit? Oh, that was a turning point in my career.
Yeah, most people would say, and before 2013, I would have said the same thing. We call it in the strategic coach community, we call it ceilings of complexity. And in my business, there's ceilings of complexity. The first ceiling is, can you make six figures, right? That's are you going to be able to make a living at this? And the second ceiling is at 250. The third's at $500,000. And then there's a massive ceiling at $1 million a year in what you do. And before 2013, I would have said, hey, kind of breaking through those ceilings was very important for me. And being in the coach program really helped me. But I had something bigger happen to me. In 2013, I get diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. So I get cancer. And the outcome of this isn't what you think it was. There's several things came through with this. The first was, I get diagnosed with this cancer, and I knew that what I was going to go through was this massive amounts of chemo. So I was going to take a year off. And I had been in the strategic coach program for, at the time, just about 20 years, 19 or 20 years. And so I walked in to my team that I had been building via the strategic coach principles, and which is one of them is a self-managing team. And I said, I am going to go through this process now. I think I'm going to be fine, but I'm gone. I'm out for a year. I won't be here. And I walked out. A year later, I came back in and everything was going good. And in fact, which was crazy, the year that I was out, I was still number one in the office. Hmm. I had built this team. So today, this breakthrough to me was this, I had built the team that I always thought of, but I built it for different reasons, being able to do these buckets that we were talking about. But it also affected this cancer thing that I went through for a year, and it was like this self-managing team. And I really, really, really learned the value of how important it is to build a team on a continuous basis. And since 2013, I've been focused 100% on collecting. I say I'm a collector of unique abilities. Anybody who wants to meet me that has some cool skill set, I meet with them, man, because I love the ability. We're hiring a couple positions right now, and I now can go because I have this network, and it's like, how can I get to this cool person? So that, and then at the same time, I ended up publishing a couple of books that I had written but had not published at the time that got published in 2013. So it was a big year for me in a positive way.
Wow. Yeah. That's a big turning point.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're here and we get to have this conversation.
Yep.
At the very least, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've mentioned your books and several and more on the way. And so we're, of course, Igniting Souls Publishing Agency. We love books. We love authors. We'd love to hear a little bit about your books. I know beforehand you had mentioned, like, I know you're not here to like sell anything or drive traffic anywhere. And so that is testament to your humility here and the value first approach you have to our conversation, which we appreciate. But I would love to hear a little bit about your books, maybe something that you're working on and what we can expect from the world of Craig.
Yeah. So I had this crazy meeting 20 years ago, 20 years ago for Christmas, my sister-in-law bought me this self-published book and I read it in like a day. And the guy who wrote it was actually living in Phoenix, So he was doing, he was self-published and he was doing bookstore signings. And I saw that he was doing a bookstore signing. I couldn't go. So I sent a guy who worked for me and I said, hey, pick up 10 books. And I have him sign them because I want to give these out. I was so, the book was so powerful to me. And he went down there, got the 10 books signed. And I get a call in my car, you know, back day, that was the big Motorola brick.
Yeah.
And I go, hey, Craig Coppola. And he picks up and the book was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki.
Yeah.
And Robert calls me and he's, because he's schlepping books at the time. He had just started this. He says, hey, want to go to lunch? I want to meet you. You just bought 10 of my books. And I'm like, hell yeah. He goes, let's go to lunch tomorrow. Because he's an author. He wasn't working. He was self-employed at the time. So I went to work with Robert. And now it's a 25-year relationship. He's been an investor of mine for a long period of time. And the way I started the first two books that I wrote, Robert had asked me, because I'm his guy that he invests with if he invests with commercial real estate. So he said, I want you to be one of my advisors and write a book on commercial real estate because that's what you do. So the first two books I wrote for Robert and they were published in the Rich Dad Advisor Series. So How to Invest in Commercial Real Estate, the Art of Commercial Real Estate Leasing are the first two books. So What I Do for a Living and those are, and they do great. They sell great. So once I got the kind of the hang of it, I had been doing because as I raised my kids, I had been sending my kids little articles and with my comments on them. I'm one of these guys. I'm always reading, always learning. Mm. You know, what inspires me is to learn. So I was just sending them. So I started, I just put it together in a book. And I had written this book called The Fantastic Life, really as a legacy thing for my kids, how to get it, live it, and pass it along. And then when I got cancer, I published The Fantastic Life during the cancer year. And that's turned into this whole big, I have the blog, this Lifeies, LIFEIES.com blog that everybody gets it every week. And it's just this whole massive thing, Fantastic Life, that's kind of blown up on its own. So those are the first three books. And then the fourth book, I know I'm rambling here, but the fourth
book. No, please. We'll have to hear that. I love the diversity of these books too.
Yeah, we founded this company called Lee & Associates and Bill Lee was the founder. And Bill Lee was this ingenious guy. And Bill and I became best friends. And he really became a second father to me. And he was trying to write a book as he retired 7 or 8 years ago. And he couldn't figure out how to do it. And I'm like, hey, let's just write it together. So the fourth book was called Chasing Excellence. And it's co-written with Bill and I. It's just stories from our careers. So you know, anyway. And then I wrote a book on cancer. You know, there's a ton of books, if you get through cancer, how to kind of survive and do that. There is zero books on cancer. If the minute you get diagnosed, what do you do? Hmm. So I wrote a book called What Next? What Now? And it's a 5-prong approach to, hey, you just got knocked on your ass for getting a diagnosis that you didn't think you were going to get. Now, what do you do? And it's a little book. Every proceeds go to charity and I don't get any penny out of it. And so that's the kind of stuff that I'm doing. So fun.
I love it. That's so cool, man. I love just it, the whole ecosystem you've developed of based on your interests and your skills and your experience, whether it's, you know, from cancer or from real estate and investing, you've just producing content, adding value to people who need to learn more about this. And these books are just ways of being able to provide some value to people who just can learn from your experience. And I love that. Thank you. So I guess we just have a couple minutes left here of our time together. It's gone by fast and I appreciate you, man. I would like to ask to kind of wrap up our time here. What's one word, what's one word if you were to provide advice to an entrepreneur to sum up what makes a successful entrepreneur in your experience? In one word, what would that one word be?
Grit. To me,
grit.
Mm. To grit. Yeah, I'm the process, you know, embrace the process guy. We were talking about yesterday. I'm rewriting The Fantastic Life right now, we published it during the cancer, and we're rewriting it. We're going to make it probably 3 times bigger because it's blown up. And so the Fantastic Life revisited, and we were talking about. One of the rules, which is the 2% rule, right? And I've just lived on this 2% rule. And I don't live on it in terms of just how do I do my activities and how to, but I do it on my relationships. How do I make my relationships 2% better? And it's all boils down to grit, which Angela Duckworth defines as perseverance and passion for long-term goals, right? And that's what entrepreneurial it means. You're not gonna invent Instagram and a year later be a billion-dollar company. Mm-hmm. That's not who I am. I'm a guy who 37 years later, I'm pretty proud of what I've done, but it took, you know, I'm the overnight success that took 37 years. And it's so decades of Habanero grit. Ventures, 25 years. Habanero Real Estate, 25 years. Writing books over the, knowing Robert for 25 years. It just takes time.
That's so good. It's that grit that allows you to bet on yourself and stick with it and never be able to look back. And that's quite the legacy you have. And I really appreciate your time sharing your story, sharing your entrepreneurial journey. It's fascinating, multifaceted conversation here with Craig Coppola. That's fascinating. And Craig, I really value our time together. And I'm going to let people know that they can find out more about you. You said, hey, you know what? Google you. Look you up on Amazon, Craig Coppola. Check out the books. There's the fantasticlife.com based on that book, lifeease.com blog. Many ways to learn more about the things that we talked about today. So we will look into that more. And we appreciate you, Craig. And thank you so much for sharing your time here in this conversation today.
Thanks, Mike. This is fun. This is great.
Love it. So good, man. All right. Well, this has been another episode of the Ignited Entrepreneur Series. Many thanks to our special guest today, Craig Coppola. And this is Mike Domini. I'll see you next time. Stay ignited. Thanks for listening to the Igniting Souls Show. At Igniting Souls Publishing Agency, we help authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers write, publish, and market their books the right way and turn them into 18 streams of income. We invite you to our annual Igniting Souls Conference. Learn more at IgnitingSoulsConference.com.